Welcome back to another edition of the Edge Podcast. Publisher Brendan Slaughter here for BeaversEdge.com, joined by Beavers Edge writer Ryan Harlan. We're coming to you guys in advance of Oregon State's Sweet 16 matchup against Notre Dame. The Beavers are headed east, headed to Albany, New York to take on the Fighting Irish. It's going to be a great matchup, and it is the first Sweet 16 matchup that's going to be played on the women's side as things get going early on Friday morning, Ryan, 11 a.m. for Oregon State fans here on the West Coast. So we're going to be bringing you guys wall-to-wall coverage, so make sure to stay locked to BeaversEdge.com. Want to welcome on Ryan. As you guys all know, Ryan was with me down at Gill Coliseum this last weekend covering the round of 64 and the round of 32. Ryan, it's good to see you, my man. How's spring break treating you?
Good to see you as well. Spring break, nice little lull in action before we get this more basketball on Friday. And I know it's gonna be an early tip, but I will take that over a later tip on the East Coast at any point in time, having lived there and having grown up there on the East Coast before coming out here to Oregon State.
Yeah, you know, it's you know, you kind of look at the bracket, Ryan, and as it ended up breaking out, you know, the bracket for the most part pretty much went chalk. I mean, you know, obviously, you know, not a whole lot of upsets on Oregon State's side of the bracket. You know, you look at what obviously the Beavers were able to do in the first round, taking down Eastern Washington 73-51, and then in the second matchup took down Nebraska 61-51. We'll kind of get into those each individual matchups. And then below the Beavers, obviously Notre Dame took advantage of a 15 seed in Kent State and cruised to their first round win, then took down Ole Miss 71-56. Then on the opposite side of the same bracket, South Carolina and Indiana are the two teams awaiting. So should Oregon State be able to knock off the Fighting Irish on Friday, that would set up a Sunday matchup between South Carolina and Indiana, depending on who won that matchup. Ryan, it's pretty safe to say that South Carolina is the team to beat in the field. So Oregon State, should they get past the Fighting Irish, are not going to have any easier of a road. But nevertheless, you know, even though it kind of went the way that we expected, you know, Oregon State hosting, taking the first two games at home. And, you know, you and I were there on Friday after they beat Eastern Washington, and Scott Ruick had mentioned then that, like, that game prepping for Eastern Washington was almost more of a stress than like a fun, because he's like, this is the game you can't lose. When you host, you can't lose that first game, right? And, you know, Oregon State played a very inspired Eastern Washington team, and they were able to put their foot down and ultimately get that win. And then faced a much stiffer test against Nebraska. And that was a game that, again, Oregon State only won by 10, Ryan. And I say only because that game kind of hung around until, like, the very end. It was kind of a weird kind of muck it up game, kind of make it ugly a little bit, which is kind of Oregon State's style. They obviously play better when they hold their opponent well below their scoring marks, and they're able to kind of play that defensive game. But obviously, you know, the Eastern Washington game, I feel like that's pretty self-explanatory. We'll talk about it a little bit, but what were your thoughts from that Nebraska game? Is Nebraska, you know, for what it's worth, I know that Oregon State was able to win, Ryan, but Nebraska played Iowa really tough this year a couple times, and they had some solid wins on the year. They were a good team.
Oh, yeah. Nebraska going into this matchup was a solid three-point shooting team, and they really couldn't get anything going inside either. The 10 blocks, that'll do it for them. And their head coach was saying afterwards, they went first before Oregon State did, and talking to Scott Ruick and Talia and Tamia Gardner, that those blocks and defensively what they were able to do just prevented them from scoring a lot more points than they did. And they were, before they had made couple threes late in the game to bring it close within 10, they only had made two the entire game up until that point. So it was very much a tough shooting stretch for Nebraska through most of four quarters, essentially. And and then for, on the opposite end, for Oregon State, started out very hot and then faltered a bit in the second quarter. Just both teams couldn't buy a shot, and then they drained three threes in a row to get back in it, which were some really big important threes to extend out that lead. I think the Beavers just hit shots when they mattered the most and were able to connect when they could.
Totally. And I'm curious your take too, because, you know, it's one of the most unique things about women's basketball, Ryan. You know, obviously you being here with us at Oregon State, obviously kind of know the baseball format, but other than baseball, women's basketball is very similar as far as the postseason goes, at least the first couple rounds, right? So, you know, it is not something you can take for granted when you can host the first two rounds at your building. And, you know, there's obviously many reasons why, but Ryan, I think a big reason why you don't see a whole lot of the quote unquote Cinderellas in women's basketball, I think there's a lot of reasons, but I think a big reason is that because for those Cinderellas to get on their run, they have to go into a South Carolina's home, a Notre Dame's home, a, you know, Stanford's home, a USC's home, and try and beat them on their home floor and then advance, compared to, like, you know, men's March Madness, where, like, you know, you've got Kentucky and Oakland in, you know, Dallas, right? And it's like, that's not really a, and I actually don't know if that's where they played off the top of my head, but, you know, I'm just throwing it out there. Like, you know, and that was a cool win, obviously, for Oakland. But, you know, would they have been able to get that win if they had to go into Lexington, Kentucky and play Kentucky at home? I don't know, right? So I think that's kind of a very unique thing about women's basketball. And obviously, you and I were there Friday. I don't think they would have necessarily needed the crowd to ultimately get that win. You know, you could tell real early, to your point about the defense in the second game, that's exactly what they did in the first game, right? Scott Ruick, they were trailing after first quarter, circled the wagons and said, hey, we're going to start playing some defense. And I think, you know, after Eastern Washington shot something like 55% in that first quarter, never shot higher than like 35 the rest of the way. So they really did clamp down. I'm curious for you, Ryan, how big of an impact was that crowd on Sunday against Nebraska? And just play the hypothetical, how do you think this one plays out if they weren't at home?
For the crowd, that definitely played a role. I think Nebraska players kind of touched on it a little bit. I think Jazz Shelley touched on it a little bit in the postgame presser, which, you know, they kind of said that, like, hey, we've gone into hostile environments
right
on the road before. That went over Iowa.
Pretty good program there in Iowa.
Yeah. And they were, that definitely played a role for sure. And I really do think it probably would have been a different story had Nebraska been playing at home. Probably a similar score for sure, but definitely played a big, big factor. And that crowd on Sunday was louder than it was on Friday. I like hung around a little bit after the game, finishing writing, and like my ears were still ringing a bit after the game. And it was like, that crowd was, that's, I think, one of the loudest. Well, I thought Friday was loud. That was one of the loudest environments I've ever been in Gill and in my time here. And that was just really cool to, really cool to see that. And Beaver Nation showed out. That's all I can say. Yeah, they showed out big.
Yeah, it's been awesome to see the support from Oregon State fans, you know, getting out and supporting the women's basketball program. Because to your point, like, you know, obviously they hadn't hosted in a handful of years. And I hadn't, you know, been, you know, you don't think you forget in like 4 or 5 years, but you kind of do a little bit. And I was like, oh, yeah, like this was kind of like what this environment was like, you know, handful of years ago, obviously pre-COVID times when Oregon State had, you know, pretty much hosted every single year. So, and we talked a lot about that with Scott Ruick afterwards. And you know, that was kind of a cool moment to kind of, you know, see how excited they were to kind of get back to hosting again, because it had been such a staple of the program, like I said, for so long, like when I was in your shoes, Ryan, and down at Oregon State. And that was obviously where they hung their hat on, was being an elite program, and they're right back in that mix. Kind of just some final thoughts from that. I mean, with that, Ryan, you can never take advantage or take for granted how important it was for Oregon State to host. And I only say that because, like I said, looking at the bracket, you know, imagine if it had, you know, went the other way and, you know, Oregon State maybe is, you know, you go back to that Pac-12 tournament game against Colorado, right? Where it was pretty much the unsaid thing, like, hey, whoever gets this win is probably going to host, and whoever doesn't is probably not. And that's pretty much how it played out, right? Colorado ended up being a 5 seed. They didn't host. But particularly a team that I was curious to kind of talk about just a little bit slightly was Utah, because I thought Utah was one of the better teams in the conference this year. Again, Utah, Ryan, who For what it's worth, gave South Carolina a game this year. You know, you go look back at the non-conference, and Alyssa Pelley, that team gave the Gamecocks all they could handle in the non-conference, and they lose to Gonzaga. Gonzaga in Gonzaga, and I don't mean to take anything away from Gonzaga, but Utah was like a really good team this year, and they didn't get to host. And you know, I just think the potential for that kind of a thing, you know, can obviously happen more. And you know, I think once again, you can't take for granted that Oregon State was able to take care of business, get to the Sweet 16, because as you and I point out, Ryan, this is only the fifth overall for Ruick and the sixth Sweet 16 ever in school history. It's not like Sweet 16s are growing on trees, you know?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, no, absolutely. And hosting is really important because you got that home crowd behind you, and it's an environment that you're used to playing in. And the teams that are coming to you have not played in this environment before. So that's a big, I think, a big factor too, just the familiarity of being at home is a really big deal for a lot of those programs. And I saw something from the women's team, the social media team, posting that they were 18-2 this year at Gill.
Pretty good.
That's pretty good. That's pretty good.
Pretty good.
So yeah, I think we probably would have seen maybe a different result, maybe they probably win that. We're playing in hypotheticals now, but sure. Like maybe they win that first round and then they bounce out of the round of 32 if they don't get that opportunity to host after that win in the Pac-12 tournament over Colorado, which if you look at kind of weighing the two a little bit, I'm like, that double overtime game, I think after that, Beavers just lost all the momentum and gas that they had, because that double overtime, that takes a lot out.
And it's
of
like
you.
they needed it, and they knew that they needed like no disrespect, because hey, Colorado took care of business. They I forget who their first round opponent was, but they beat Kansas State in Kansas in Manhattan. So credit to the Buffs, man. And I said forever, Colorado's a really good team. Like, pretty much every team in the Pac-12 was really good who made it into the, you know, into the round of 64 this year. I know Arizona came in as like an 11 seed and they got bounced the first round, but even Arizona was good this year to an extent. So Pac-12 was deep this year, Ryan. And honestly, that's really what it came down to. But, you know, I've also seen it. I've seen Oregon State reach the Sweet 16 when not hosting. So anything's possible and it can always happen, but you just feel so much better playing at home. And you could just tell from the smiles on the girls' faces, smiles on Scott's face, like they were genuinely stoked and thrilled to be at Gill Coliseum. And, you know, it was awesome. You know, it was a great weekend. And, you know, obviously Oregon State took care of business. But now take a breath and the deck resets, Ryan, because now another really, 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 really good opponent comes to the table in the Notre Dame Fighting Irish. And we'll obviously be previewing that at beaversedge.com this week. So make sure to stay locked into it. And, you know, I'll say this, Ryan, this is the one time I'm going to complain about it, and then I won't say it again. I think both the fan bases of UConn, who is playing in the Portland regional, just 10 miles up the road from me here, and Oregon State, who's from Oregon and going to Albany, New York, which is not very far from Storrs, Connecticut, would love to trade places. They're both three seeds, Ryan, so it works very easily. So I'm just saying that's the one complaint. I know all the reasons as to why and the NCAA rules on playing teams and yada yada. I don't care. It was the silliest thing in the world that Oregon State is not in Portland with a chance for Beaver Nation, as you mentioned. And I'm sure Beaver Nation will travel out and support well. But Ryan, realistically, asking Beaver Nation to travel 3,000 miles when you could have been like, hey, Moda Center is right here, literally right up the road. And, you know, obviously hope all goes well. But I'll say this. I think the NCAA and Moda might have missed out on some revenue here, Ryan. Just a thought.
Oh no, I agree. And when like thinking about seeding before the announcement came out, it's like you'd hope the NCAA does the right thing and puts a team that's literally not that far away from Portland in the Portland regional. And I'm like, well, that's what you get for trying to assume that they're going to do the right thing. But like making that 3,000 mile trek, like I've done it before by airplane. It's a lot.
It is
a lot. And that's something where like, you know, I will expect Beaver Nation travel well, but like probably might be a smaller contingent of fans compared to others that are at Albany because of the travel distance.
Yeah, it's so definitely it's definitely interesting. Yeah, I think it's definitely interesting from the perspective that it's not really, Ryan, a home game for Notre Dame either. Like, obviously, way easier, sure, for Notre Dame to get there, but I just had to look because I was curious. It's an 11-hour drive from Albany, New York to Notre Dame. So I'm just, you know, that still means that they would have to fly. I mean, hey, if Moda was 10 hours away, I think that'd be a little tough too. But yeah. No, I mean, for the most part, like, you know, I guess I don't want to make the whole podcast about that. But specifically, I know I've said a few times, like, just... like, where are the brains, man? Like, it's not even like create an unnecessary home court advantage. It's like the NCAA is about profit. Who doesn't want to make money? I guarantee you there is not a team, unless like Gonzaga or Stanford, but even still, they wouldn't sell out as well as Oregon State would if they were in, like, you know, Moda's gonna look back and go, man, we could have had a lot of orange and black in the seats. So, you know, just saying, it seemed like a missed opportunity, but nevertheless, the Beavers will take it and go to work with the blue collar mentality that they have, Ryan. Before we dive into kind of some of the numbers, what are just your kind of initial thoughts on this matchup? Obviously, 2 seed versus 3 seed, you know, other than South Carolina, the best of the best in this side of the Albany regional. Just initial thoughts. Do you think this is a game where Oregon State can take advantage and, you know, potentially punch their ticket to the Elite Eight? Is it going to be super tough from what you're, you know, seeing and looking at? What are just your initial thoughts?
My initial thoughts are, well, I saw the line and it's like Notre Dame's like a 3.5 point favorite. So it's going to be a tight one. That's for sure. But also, too, at the same time, I'm like, it's March. Any team has a chance for an upset.
Absolutely.
And as John Rothstein says, we sleep in May. Like, that's exactly how,
ain't that
how
the
I
truth?
Feel. Yeah. Like, I mean, even too, like, after leaving Gill, I was like, hey, while basketball may be done at the Gill, we still got more. We still got more to go. And I think it's always possible. You never say never to that. But I think it's going to be a little tougher competition than what Oregon State has faced in the first two rounds by, I would say, a relatively significant margin, especially that first round matchup against Eastern Washington, definitely a significant step. And then for Nebraska, probably about that kind of as well, too. But if they can play defense like they've been doing in those first two rounds, they got a shot. They definitely have a shot to advance to the Elite Eight.
Yeah, you know, it's definitely interesting, Ryan, because I mentioned this to you, I believe, over the weekend, and it's that, you know, for those who have been following the program for a while, I don't know if there's quite a team other than Stanford who has kind of been the you know, pebble in the shoe of Scott Ruick, so to speak, in big moments more than Notre Dame. Only because, you know, the games have been a few years back now, but all in the Scott Ruick era, Ryan, Beavers are 0-4 all time against Notre Dame, right? Those losses are by 1, 5, 10, and 12 points. And, you know, I remember the 1 point loss specifically well, because I believe that game was here at Gill Coliseum, you know, a handful of years ago. And that game stands out extremely well. And I think that this is kind of a game where Scott Ruick as a coach probably really wants this more than, like, you know, in a different way than like his players, because he's like, those Irish again, kind of a thing. Right. And, you know, I think he's going, you know this about Scott. Scott's maybe one of the best competitors as a coach that I know. He is extremely competitive. He is always looking for an edge and how to, you know, consistently make his teams, you know, play above the level that they're at. And I think that's kind of the greatness of Scott Ruick, is being able to get the most out of his girls. And then even more than that, being able to turn it up even another degree. So with that, you mentioned, obviously, Notre Dame comes in as a 3.5 point favorite. They're 28-6 on the year. Beavers 26-7. Notre Dame finished third in the ACC behind Virginia Tech and NC State, or excuse me, behind Virginia Tech. They're tied with NC State and Syracuse at 13-5. So obviously a good year for the Fighting Irish, but let's talk a little bit about the differences in the teams, Ryan. Obviously, the thing that jumps out the most to me is just how different they are depth-wise. Notre Dame does not nearly go as deep as Oregon State does. They're kind of reliant on their starting six, starting seven, and that kind of all starts with Hannah Hildego, who's one of the better players in all of women's basketball, averaging 22 points, six rebounds, five and a half assists a game. And then ho-hum on top of that, Ryan, five steals a game as well. So she is, you know, a really good basketball player, and she's kind of the engine that makes the Irish go. I think very much like, you know, the case is whenever Scott Rook's teams go up against any good team, you look at whose style is going to win out. And Notre Dame averages almost 80 points per game. They're 27-4 when they score at least 59. And, you know, that's the thing where Oregon State, that's the sweet spot, right? 59.4 points is what they allow. So starting on that side of the ball, Ryan, you know, let's start with defense for Oregon State. The challenge of slowing down Hannah Hildego, that's going to be tough. And, you know, you've also got Sonia Citrone, who's averaging 17 points, Maddie Westfeld, 14 points. You know, you mentioned, obviously, Kylie Watson as well being thrust into a bigger role. They've got some talent. They've got a lot of talent, like any Notre Dame team is that you would expect. And from that perspective, we'll talk about Oregon State's offense against Notre Dame's defense in a minute, but that defense is going to have their hands full, Ryan, and I think that, you know, Donovan Hunter is going to have to play, you know, big defensive minutes on Hannah. I think Talia is going to have to play some big defense, you know, maybe show multiple girls as far as, you know, different looks. But, yeah, ultimately, I think that offense, that's going to be the challenge, is can they slow down Notre Dame's offense, kind of muck it up like they did against Nebraska?
Yeah, that's going to be the biggest point of emphasis I think I'm going to keep an eye on. And You got players that can score from anywhere on the court. And speaking of Sonia Citrone, she's one of a few Notre Dame legends that have gone through that program who have multiple 25 plus points per game. In addition to her, Skylar Diggins, Ruth Riley, Jackie Young, Kayla McBride, Jewel Lloyd, and Arike Ogunbowale.
Pretty good names.
So pretty good names in company with her on that list. And that's definitely going to be a lot of ask on Donovan Hunter, especially to as a freshman in a big game like that. And definitely, like you said, Talia is going to have to play big defensive minutes as well. It's really just everybody being as sound as possible and not having a slow start right out the gate in the first quarter. And I think that first round matchup against Eastern Washington, sure, they started out slow. Beavers started out a bit slow, but once they figured it out, they can match up well just as much as anybody. And then it was quite the opposite against Nebraska, where they started out fast but had a lull in there in the second to about start of third quarter, and then they hit those three threes, and they're able to regain some momentum on their side. And and really the way that Ruick kind of described both of those games was kind of like, that's just basketball. You're going to have some really good moments, and then you're going to have some ones that are kind of head scratching a little bit, and you just got to work through them. And I think Talia was saying that, like, yeah, we could have let those things kind of affect us negatively, but we didn't. We just kept going through it, and we were able to knock down shots and secure win. So right. I think that's what, like you said, they're going to have to just power through and win ugly.
Right. And I'm also,
it's been their brand all season. It's kind right. of been all season.
Right. And I think kind of with this team and, you know, the way that, you know, obviously you go back and look at where they were last year, right? Like, this is natural growth, right? And this is even, in my opinion, you're playing with house money compared to where this team was a year ago to where they are now. Like, you know, maybe next year they win games and they're going away with a more veteran laden team. And they're not, you know, but for right now, they figured out the formula, like you said, that helps this team win games. And if there is an advantage, Ryan, I'll say this, looking at Notre Dame, You know, whether or not Maddie Westfeld and Kylie Watson can match up with Reagan Beers, I think is going to be flipping over to Oregon State's side, is going to be Oregon State's ultimate offensive X factor. Because you look at, you know, they've only got, you know, two or three forwards. I mentioned Westbeld and Watson, and they've also got Marshall, who's played in a handful of games. But that's only three forwards that have played in, you know, at least 25 more games. If Oregon State could feed Beers, try to get those players in foul trouble, I think that's a path to, you know, that could be successful. But then again, on the opposite side, Ryan, I could see Notre Dame being like, anybody but Beers, and being like, okay, Beers gets the ball in the post, we're going to have, you know, Watson or Westbell garter straight up, but then we're going to have Hildegard or Citrone come around from the front and try to swipe at the ball, double team. And that's where the onus, I think, is going to be on Ryan. Can Reagan Beers pass out of the double team, and can she find her open shooters? And then with that, can those shooters hit shots, right? So I think back to like Domenica Perova in that first game, right? That was kind of what Eastern Washington did early. They frustrated Beers. They threw a lot of girls at her, and they're like, here's your wide open threes in the corner. And first quarter, Oregon State wasn't hitting them, right? So I think, and hence why Eastern Washington, and they turned the ball over and, you know, other things, and that's why Eastern Washington had a lead. But I think if Notre Dame is going to show more pressure on Beers, because I think if you look at it right now, Beers against Westbeld or Watson, I would take Beers, and I would like that one-on-one matchup. But if they decide to double her, bring more guards at her, and swing the ball around, Ryan, you mentioned earlier, we were talking about the Nebraska game, what would happen if, you know, Oregon State wasn't able to get hot from three. This is where if Notre Dame is able to effectively neutralize Beers, which they could, you know, they're a good enough team, they're well coached, they have great athletes. If the Beavers don't hit their outside shots, you know, deep twos, whatever it is, mid-range, that's where I think this one could go the other way, because Notre Dame likes to get out, they like to run, they can score the ball quickly. And as you know, Ryan, Oregon State's a team that's not built to necessarily play from behind.
Oh, yeah, no, absolutely. And then two, Watson is injured, so that's going to be stress on the two other forwards for Notre Dame. And
yes, that's
and
right.
I like Beers in that matchup, but at the same time, as you also mentioned, the game plan for Nebraska was to stop Beers first and bring out and give the ball to anybody else and say, hey, beat us with Talia, beat us with Tamia Gardner. That was their plan, and that's why Beers ended up getting into foul trouble there. And I think this team is capable of, because not only a testament to their depth, of winning in different ways, but if they get that kind of look, they've seen it before of like, oh, okay, they're doubling Beers down the post, kick it out to Talia or Tamia Gardner in the corner, sure, and knock down three. That's definitely, I think, where if they are able to kind of recognize that early and get out to that early lead, then they can control the tempo of this game. But if they don't,
right,
it's going to be really hard for them to play this team. It's going to be really hard for this team to play catch up, knowing the style that Scott likes to run, especially offensively, a lot of those offensive sets that he runs. So that's definitely going to be, I think, a big thing to watch there. But I still like that matchup though for Beers against the forwards for Notre Dame, because
right,
most of the time I've seen Beers in those double teams and she finds a way to get a shot up, and
right,
it's going to be a very interesting, I think, kind of matchup to look at going forward, because if she's in foul trouble, that's going to be
part of
a really, really big thing to keep in mind.
Oh,
if
yeah,
they're going down the stretch there in the fourth quarter and it's a close game, because I was sitting there during the Nebraska game and it was starting to get a little too close,
right,
probably for a lot of fans in the arena there, where yeah, like you're getting really close and you're like wondering, I'm like, okay, Scott, are you gonna bring back in Reagan? Like, I know she has four fouls, but like,
right,
time is ticking. But he didn't, and Beers sat out the rest of the fourth quarter, but he kind of talked about it post-game and was like, look, those games that we didn't play with Reagan on the court.
Right, when she was injured. Yeah.
Those were big, and those were important in the grand scheme of things.
Very true.
That it was very much important for that game to play without Reagan on the floor. And this, I think this team is more than capable of doing that should that happen against Notre Dame.
Right, and to your point, right, I had got her mixed up with another girl, but to Ryan's point, yes, Kylie Watson did get injured in the ACC championship game, so that's another forward they won't have. So again, that's really down to then Westfeld and Marshall, and maybe they bring in Becky Obima, perhaps if they you know, but two forwards, Ryan. Again, if Oregon State can play their game, I, you know, that's an opening you see in this Notre Dame team. And again, more than anything, I think it really is going to be everything you just mentioned. Obviously, whose style wins out, who, you know, if Oregon State's able to get their front court involved, if Notre Dame's able to get their guards involved, because, you know, as we mentioned, Notre Dame rides with that guard play, you know, almost averaging 40 points between Hildego and Citrone. And you obviously threw in those amazing stats and the company that Sonia keeps, which is, you know, some amazing women's basketball guards the last decade or so. So I really do think it's going to be a very daunting task for the Beavers, Ryan. But at the same token, you mentioned it, anything can happen in March. And this would not be anything new for Scott Ruick's team. I mean, I think of a couple times where once in the Elite Eight and then once in the Sweet 16 where they played a Baylor team in the last, you know, 8 years. Kim Mulkey coached Baylor team, for what it's worth. And, you know, both times, Oregon State was not heavy, but it was Baylor's probably going to win this game. Baylor's probably going to win this game. And Oregon State both times, you know, was able to get it done. And one time went to the Final Four after that win. The other went to the Elite Eight. So Scott Ruick is no stranger to winning these games and winning these games in, you know, hostile environments, so to speak, you know, away from, you know, obviously Corvallis and Oregon. So I think, you know, the matchup, the way this game does shake out, you know, I think it's going to be interesting to see how the styles conflict and all that once we actually see it on Friday morning. Again, 11 a.m. ESPN is the tip-off time there at the MVP Arena in Albany, New York. But TJ or Ryan, at the moment, I was telling TJ this over the weekend, I actually like Oregon State's chances in this game. And if I were to say picking right now, even though they are 3.5-point underdogs, I think I could confidently pick the Beavs in this. You know, we'll get to, excuse me, what could be next. You know, obviously South Carolina is a Goliath just waiting around the corner. So it's like, oh, even if you win, you get to go deal with them. But for the most part, like, I really do think that Oregon State matches up stylistically well in this game. And if they can play their game, it really would not surprise me to see them pull this one out. And, you know, hey, Ryan, maybe they get a little revenge for the football team, eh?
Football and soccer.
Right, and soccer, right.
Yeah. Yeah, it was like,
so I, you know, I give them a little jab right?
When I posted the matchup on, because I was waiting for it, and then when I saw it was Notre Dame,
yeah,
and everyone's like, we're playing Notre Dame for the third time in a row?
Yeah.
Like, hopefully, you know, fingers crossed that this is the one that can get revenge for both of those two losses there, which I will say, though, for football, it's like, yeah, even though that was a loss in the Sun Bowl, still lead the series all time.
It's so true. Very true.
I'm like, I ran into a couple of made some friends with a couple of student journalists down there for Notre Dame, and I was like, hey, like, I kind of gave them the nudge, like, hey, congrats on your first win against Oregon State.
Oh, that was rich, man. That was rich.
Yeah.
But, I was like, that's
like,
awesome.
I was like, look, I'm more than willing to be friendly, but like, I'll throw in a playful jab here.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. But no, yeah, it's, again, like you said, very coincidental that the Beavers and Irish have suddenly, you know, become such common opponents across many different sports this calendar year. But again, like I said, Beaver fans will not have to wait long, Ryan, for this matchup. You know, we're recording this podcast here on a Wednesday afternoon, and that's, you know, that's less than 48 hours, less than 36, I think, if I'm doing my math correctly. So it's, you know, it's going to happen real quick. Obviously, the first game, as we mentioned, of the Sweet 16. I actually think, and last point on this, that is kind of an advantage to the Beavers, Ryan, as far as rest goes, because Oregon State was done playing at, 3-4 o'clock Sunday. Notre Dame played Monday. So, and then both teams turn around and play Friday. So the Beavers do have, you know, an extra day's rest, and that obviously will probably help with the travel. But, you know, that's why I was surprised to see this game on Friday, because Notre Dame played Monday. I thought for sure this would be a Saturday game, but Nevertheless, folks, tell your boss you're going to need some time off at 11 a.m. Friday morning. Say you got, you know, get some Beavs on the stream. Maybe take your lunch break with the Beavs, because it's going to be an important game Friday morning, obviously 11 a.m. for us here on the West Coast, coming from MVP Arena. Make sure to stay locked to myself and Ryan Harlan. We obviously won't be out there in Albany, New York, not taking the trek, unfortunately. Again, we were kind of hoping it'd be up the road here at Portland, but nevertheless, we're going to be supporting the Beavs all the way through. So make sure to stay locked into BeaversEdge.com. Beyond this podcast, we're going to have more preview content, obviously leading up to the matchup, and preview pieces. And then Ryan and I will obviously be keeping you guys busy with the game thread at BeaversEdge.com for the Beavers Edge subscribers. So definitely make sure to check that out. And if you want to get a refresh of last weekend, make sure to read Ryan and I's stories from over the weekend. We had a whole bunch of takeaways from those two games, so check that out over at BeaversEdge.com. Ryan, want to give you a big shout-out for joining me on this edition of the podcast, man. Thanks for spending part of your spring break with me, my man. And looking forward to talking ball with you as we get ready for this game on Friday, man. It's going to be a good one.
Yeah, very good one. Very exciting. And definitely one where I'll be paying attention to, that's for sure. I was like, I've gotten to see now – both men's basketball and women's basketball make a run in the tournament. So that's always fun. This time around, I got to be part of the women's there for the first 2 rounds. So, because that Elite Eight run was COVID, which I wasn't here for. So, but still, nonetheless, going to be a fun matchup.
It's exciting. And we're excited to bring you guys coverage. Again, big shout out to Ryan for jumping on this edition of the Edge podcast with me. We'll be back. We'll probably talk sometime next week. If Oregon State beats Notre Dame, we might come to you guys with an emergency podcast previewing the South Carolina game. If not, we'll definitely be doing a season recap podcast next week, kind of talking about things and shifting into baseball season. As Ryan, we went an entire podcast, didn't even talk about the number 2 Oregon State baseball team, which... calm down, Diamond Boys. We're going to give you guys your love for sure. Except, you know, right now it's postseason. We want to make sure we give the ladies their due, because they've been putting in work. And obviously a huge matchup this weekend. But obviously we're getting into the full swing of things. Make sure to stay locked into BeaversEdge.com. Beyond this week, as Ryan and I and TJ have already been at spring football practices. That's going to be starting up again this next week. I believe April 4th is when they come back and start it up again. So that's going to be time to stay locked into Beaver's Edge, as well as baseball, as we mentioned, making a strong push for Omaha as we're looking here in late March. So an exciting time to be around Oregon State Athletics, and BeaversEdge.com is the place to be. So again, big shout out to Ryan Harlan for jumping on this edition. We'll talk to you guys soon. Thanks for watching / listening on this edition of the Edge podcast.